Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan McPherson. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'm absolutely thrilled to tell you about a guest in studio here today. But before we get to that, we want to remind you to connect with us on social media. Twitter at Business Radio X. Today, we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. You can also follow me personally at Ryan Redhawk, and all tweets and comments are welcome there. And please check out our Facebook page as well. Like and leave your thoughts and comments there. And now it's my distinct pleasure to welcome to the Business Radio X flagship studio, the one and only Morten Anderson. How are you doing, Morten?
I'm wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining us on this rainy, cold Friday morning. Yep. So glad you're in studio here today. We're going to be discussing a lot of different things. Yep. But let's start off with a little bit about your background. For our listeners who may not know, which are probably one or two of them, about yourself and then bring us up to speed today.
Okay. Well, I'm 55 right now as we speak, but I came to America as a 17-year-old boy. And really, my life has been the personification of the American dream. Came as an exchange student in 1977. I land on my 17th birthday and were greeted by a family who mistakenly thought my name was Lars.
Okay.
I had to disappoint them and say, no, I'm Morten. And right. So the Baker family, who were supposed to host me for 10 months, were waiting patiently behind this family who thought I was their student for 10 months.
And what city was this in?
Indianapolis, Indiana. Okay. So we figured it out, got the kids sorted out to the right families, and home we went, and blowing out the birthday candles. They had a nice cake for me, and literally 10 minutes, you know, I've been in the house maybe 10, 15 minutes. And my host dad says, oh, by the way, Morten, we need a kicker on our high school football team. Would you be interested? I knew nothing about American football. I barely spoke English at the time. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a big inclination to kind of pursue that. But he convinced me to go the very next day to a Jamboree high school game, which I did. It's a kind of a preseason high school game. My brothers were there. We sat on metal bleachers and watched this debacle that my immigrant perspective were viewing as, wow, this is just one big fight, one big pile of bodies, 22 guys. And once in a while, a stretcher would come in, carry a guy out, another guy who looked like, well, that was fun. Let me take his spot, took his place. So I kind of turned to my brother and said, I don't want to be part of this. And they said, well, you just got to kick. You just got to kick and run off the field. And the very next day, I've been in the country 48 hours. I'm out there in jersey number 42 of all numbers for a kicker. Big shoulder pads, helmet, and I'm kicking field goals all the way back to 50 yards. And literally looked over, coaches are nodding, players are clapping, and I had 80 new friends, and my American dream was off and running.
Right, and it all happened so fast for you, it sounds
like. So fast and really coincidence, Ryan. I mean, I had no inclination. I wanted to play soccer. The high school team did not have a soccer team, so their kicker at the time was the quarterback. They wanted him to focus on being a quarterback and defensive back, playing a real position, if you will. And so I was happy to oblige and plug in there. I will say this, looking back, it was a fantastic way to get integrated into the American sort of student body and be accepted. And there were four other exchange students besides myself. There was a girl from Germany, a guy from Finland, and a student from Japan, so three others. Mm-hmm. And they were having a very difficult time integrating because they it didn't happen that fast for them, the language barriers, the cultural barriers. This really allowed me, being into a sport that quickly, just getting thrown into it and kind of forcing me to think outside the box and to take risks and to kind of be outside the comfort zone. I mean, think about this now. I'm just turning 17. I barely speak the language. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving mom and dad back home. I'm going 6,000 miles away. And with the intent to stay for 10 months. Now, there was always a safety net of you can always go back. Mm-hmm. But that's failure. That's you know, that was not part of the plan for me.
Right. Failure is not an option.
It was not an option. As it progressed and became more and more clear to me that I just loved this country and what it afforded you if you really wanted to have it.
Right.
If you were hungry, if you worked hard, if you had some talent. This is the greatest country on earth to be able to do that. The platform is there yes. for everyone who has dreams, who has passions, and who has desire to be in the high-performance business. And that right. was the very start right there at Ben Davis High School on that field.
Yeah, and you haven't looked back since. You went on to Michigan State where you immersed yourself in the school up there, began kicking more footballs through the uprights and such, and really created more of a passion for it. Yep. At what point did you even start begin to have those NFL dreams?
That came much later. I had a couple of hurdles to get through way before that. Number one, I had to call my mother and tell her I was staying for 4 years. Now imagine,
yeah.
she is planning on me coming home, finishing my education in Denmark after 10 months. So she can totally right. live with that.
Yes.
Now I have a twin brother. He had already left to the South Pole on an expedition.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was gone
okay.
for 2 years. So now she's thinking, well, I'll get Morton back. And here's the phone call around Christmas time. Mom, I have an opportunity to go to a Division I college, get full rides, full scholarship, no debt coming right. out of college. Long silence at the other end. And there was a Danish guy that recruited me, Hans Nielsen at Michigan State. I said, Hans, you talk to my mom.
Right.
And he did reluctantly, and they worked it out, and we all worked it out. I said, the worst case scenario, Mom, if this fails, I'll come right. home. So 4 years at Michigan State, four wonderful formative years, and anybody who's gone to college knows what I'm talking about.
Yes,
you develop your set of ethics and morals and all those things that you've been building upon in middle school and high school, and your parents have instilled in you. They have free run, if mm-hmm. you will, and it's just a wonderful. Gumbo of people yeah. in college.
Right.
The good, the bad, and the ugly, and you have to figure it out on your own.
You got to learn to deal with all of it.
All of it. You got to be able to compromise and debate and make choices. Sometimes bad choices you make and you suffer the consequences. Most of the time, good choices, and you reap the rewards of that as well. So it taught me so much those 4 years. Finished in with a degree in languages, communications, and a minor in French and marketing. So I actually came back after my rookie year and finished my degree.
Oh, so you went back to Michigan State?
Yeah, I had a double major, and I needed 12 credits. So I went back after having spent my rookie year with the New Orleans Saints, mm-hmm. finished my degree in May, and then continued my my career in the NFL.
What were some of those early challenges and hurdles that you had to overcome once you entered the NFL and then continued to, you know, spend many years in that league as well?
Well, I think understanding that it's a full-time job, number one, and it's not a hobby anymore. That's the biggest difference jumping from college to the pros. Mm-hmm. Understanding that you've been giving a tremendous platform, but that also comes with great responsibility. That people are looking at you.
Right.
People are emulating you. Kids are looking and emulating you, and that you are a role model at a very young age, actually thrown into it. I was 21 when I turned pro in April of 82. And so there were some difficult times, I think, wrapping my head around the public persona and wanting to be private. Mm-hmm. And keeping those two separate. And it took some time to kind of wade through that.
I imagine. So did you have anyone mentoring you or helping you in those early years that really provided some guidance for you?
Yeah, I met some local business guys. And I think that's really what turned me on to becoming a mentor myself once I developed and matured. Some local business guys who had success in New Orleans who were willing to help me and to look at projects that came my way. Because believe me, a lot of stuff comes across your desk mm-hmm. when you're a pro athlete
yeah, I bet.
And young.
Every day, I'm sure you've got
options
to think about.
Yeah, and so for every 10 projects, for every 10 proposals, you know, 9 of them are right to the yeah. The trash.
Yes.
It just is. But yeah. wading through that process of deciding which is the one that I'm going to keep, where's yeah. the gold nugget? That right. was very, very helpful.
That's good to know. And certainly as you grow professionally and personally, having those mentors or people in your corner that you can go to for guidance and support is something we hear time and time again here at Business Radio X from business owners and entrepreneurs alike. And then you went on to spend many years. What motivated you or kept you inspired all those years to continue to play?
Well, a couple of different things. I wanted to be as good as I could be. And once I sort of mastered the skill, I realized I didn't master it at all. There were always new things and new ways to do it. In 1989, I hit what I call in my book, performance plateau. It was a good year, but by my standards, it was just an average year. And as an athlete, as a person, as a performer, you either get better or you get worse. Nothing stays the same. And so what I did was I took a very hard look at where I was, where I had been, where I wanted to go, and how long I wanted to play. This was only 7 years into my career, mind you. Mm-hmm. So I surrounded myself with what I call Team Anderson. And this, it's a group of people who are very good at what they do, better at what they do than what I was at what they did.
I see. Okay.
That makes sense,
yes,
right?
Sir. Yep, yep.
And so my philosophy was, let me assemble the best sports psychologist, the best fitness guy, the best dietitian, the best financial planner, the best lawyer, the best, although lawyers were not really that important to me at the time. They were a necessary evil just for looking at contracts.
Yes.
Let me find the best of everything that I need to become the best kicker. And I did that. And then with a firm plan, I continued my career. And it really, in my opinion, prolonged my career by one third,
right,
for sure.
But you were self-motivated, a self-starter, really looking to only compete for yourself. Did you have someone on the opposite side of the field that you looked at and said, you know, I want to beat that guy? Was there somebody, a most kind of gone after adversary?
No, it was more a battle within with my own, I don't want to say my own demons, but in a way they were. My fear of failure was great at the time. I was a perfectionist. One of the things the sports psychologist that I worked with for many, many years, and I think the stigma sometimes is, oh, he's got a sports psychologist.
Right,
oh,
he's got
what's wrong?
Problem.
What's wrong with him?
Right.
It's actually the opposite.
It is.
It's a tool to clarify things that you're too close to. Mm-hmm. So you take an objective person who's outside your box. He looks in. He says, Morton, because I always wanted to make 100% of my kicks, and every kickoff should be out of the end zone. That's realistic, right? Is that realistic?
Yeah, maybe not. Right.
But no, it's not realistic at all. So he started teaching me what goals should be. They should be specific. They should be motivational and realistic. Hmm. I think making 100% of field goals, probably if I missed the first one in the first game, my season's a failure.
No.
So goal windows became important to me, sort of hitting these target line, very much like business, where you don't have absolute goals. They're not motivational.
And these are some of the things you translate to business owners and on some of your speaking engagements as well. Those lessons learned in a high pressure, you know, high performance type of atmosphere like the NFL.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of parallels between the high performance business in sports and what you have to do as a CEO, as a leader in business. And it boils down to owning your workbench, understanding and the relationships that you have within your organization, understanding the weak links and bringing them on board, either bringing them on board or getting somebody else. So, you know, it was a saying Bump Phillips always said, either our team gets better two ways. We either get better players or we get the players that we have better. Very simple.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same in business. You either build from within, mm-hmm. which the New England, if you look at sports, Patriots are famous for that, for building within. They draft.
Yes.
They draft meticulously. Their free agents acquisitions are looked at very carefully. Do they fit what we're trying to do within our corporate structure and within our team? And then they stay there for a long time. And if they don't like it, they're gone.
Yeah.
They're gone. And if they don't adhere, they're gone. And I think that's something I've always taken with me, is that in that high performance business, that it is cut and dry. But if you're willing to sacrifice, boy, the rewards are really sweet.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, you recruit good talent, keeping that good talent. These are things we hear all the time from business leaders here on the radio. And mm-hmm. I know at one point, too, you wanted to become the oldest player in the NFL, and that didn't work out that way. Tell us about kind of that process towards the end of your NFL career.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I wanted to be the first 50-year-old guy to play in the NFL. George Blanda was 48 when he stopped. I was 47 when I stopped. So having that goal, which I felt at the time was realistic, It was very specific. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it, to me, was motivational. It kept me, you know, rolling along for a long time. Now, it takes two to tango. So I, when the phone stopped ringing when I was 48 and my knees could not prepare for the season anymore, then I realized it's a physical limitation that's stopping me from going to that one. So obviously I didn't reach that goal, but I came darn close, and I'm pretty proud of 25 years. When I was told by my very first team, the Saints, after 13 years with them, that I was a declining player and I continued to flourish and play another 12 years at a high level and ended up being the leading scorer in the history of the game, I think that speaks volumes.
Absolutely, yes. Leading scorer, also games played, lots of other awards and accolades that Morton has achieved through his career in the NFL. Now let's take us to that time when you transitioned out of the NFL. That must have been left a big void in your life, and you know, not knowing which direction or which skills to use to build the next chapter. Walk us through that process.
It was a painful process, to be honest with you, and in wanting to be transparent, I think it was probably the most difficult time for myself and probably for the family too. There were about 18 months there when I stopped and announced my retirement in December of 2008, where I was just floundering. There was lifestyle choices that were poor. Not getting enough exercise, drinking too much, quite honestly, just heading down the wrong road there for a little bit, floundering in the wind, like a flag that kind of, you know, is just floundering in the wind. The wind's just blowing it every which way. And I think it took my wife really just to give me an ultimatum that either I change or she's leaving.
Right.
So that has a tendency to get your attention really fast.
Right.
And so I did. I sought help, and I did get help from a behavioral psychologist, and we talked things through. He had some interesting perspectives on my career, and said, "Really, Morton, I can relate this to CEOs who retire maybe before they want, or maybe when they think they want." But he said, "Really, leaving the NFL after 25 years is like a death. It's a death of a career. It's a death of a. So if you symbolically, maybe you take your left kicking shoe and you have a funeral for it. You bury it. I said, it was too far out in left field. I couldn't do it. I got his point though. I got his metaphor. Mm-hmm. I get it. And I think I relate this to a lot of the guy leaders, CEOs that stop. And I just had a friend of mine retire from AMG, a big Fortune 500 company. And he's down now. He's playing golf in Naples, Florida, and it's beautiful. But there's no question there's a void. I mean, you can sit on so many boards. You can play so much golf. But after a while, you really need to sink your teeth into something that you're still very good at.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to give still. So I think CEOs go through that too. People that retire from businesses that have either owned or been in for a very long time have the same type of issues. They may not be willing to talk about it. I'm an open book, so it doesn't bother me. But suffice it to say, the help came. My wife clarified some things for me. We talked through some things, and I started Morton Anderson Global. I started our nonprofit with Jennifer, and we feel like we're doing good work there. And I feel like there's a lot of value in the company and what I have to offer, and a unique perspective in my speaking. And so I'm in a very good place right now.
That's good to hear. And like you mentioned, it is part of your DNA, that competitive edge, that drive to be the better you only comes from within. And then now you don't have that anymore. You've got to find a new outlet. Mm-hmm. Are you getting some of that same resonance with your mission in life now as you did in the NFL with these speaking engagements, your foundation, the Morton Anderson Family Foundation, all these different objectives in life?
Well, I think a couple of things. And yes, the answer is yes. You don't ever get the 39-yarder in the NFC Championship game to go to the Super Bowl in overtime. You don't get that buzz. You don't get that adrenaline rush. But what I do get from my event planning and from that side of it is I love when there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to a project, because then I can work my meticulous type A personality, my OCD, if you will, through that, and really be forceful and be effective and engage people and relationships I have, the networks I have, and then see this beautiful thing get created, great money, funds being raised, and it's a feel good for everyone. So That's on one side. There's the speaking on the other side. I do get adrenaline because you're in front of people, you're performing, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end there. You prepare, and then you deliver, and you get feedback. And it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's good, mm-hmm. you know? But if it's not, you learn from it, and you tweak it, and you do something different the next time. And that's, can't be scared of change. You just embrace that. And I think with my public speaking, whether it's in front of 100 people or 5,000 people, although I've never spoken in front of five, probably spoken about 2,000 people, but still, that's a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. You have to know the subject matter, and you have to come from a place of authority, whether you're a SME, a subject matter expert, or you have to have lived it. It's very difficult to talk on subject matter if you haven't lived it.
Very true.
And if you haven't experienced it.
People will know that right away, that you're not authentic.
Can't fake. You just cannot fake the real thing. And so I try to come from a place of telling stories and wrapping takeaways and concepts into the story and make it engaging, make it funny, and make it so when people leave after 45 minutes to an hour, whatever it is that they want, they say, wow, that was inspiring. And I have three solid things I can take away from that mm-hmm. mission accomplished to
right.
me.
Right. Well, when people see your name on the keynote speaking address, they say, oh, Morton Anderson, they may or may not know you of your NFL career, but they certainly don't know those personal challenges, those overcoming those triumphs that you had in life, and then being able to relate them to those people, it just humbles them, I'm sure, every time they hear you speak.
Well, I hope it resonates, because in every single human being, there's a gift that we were given by God, and we were giving it. And the key is to find it mm-hmm. and to nurture it and bring it forth. That's the challenge. That's the secret sauce. Everybody has a gift. And, you know, if I somehow can give the audience just a tidbit that resonates with them, where it might open their eyes on a different angle they look at life, or how they look at it, or instead of forcing things, maybe let things come to them a little bit more, or trusting. And just that mm-hmm. giving up process of trusting others and being vulnerable and being fragile and embracing failure and learning from it. All those things that I have had in sports, and all those things that we go through in life every day. Boy, that's a special gift I feel I can give.
I think you're absolutely spot on with that. Everyone has a special gift. And as you mentioned a few times already here during the conversation, that you couldn't do it alone, that people have helped you, motivated you, helped you sort through some of these troubled waters that you needed to navigate. So if anyone is out there thinking about throwing their hat over the fence, whatever it may be, and chasing it, you don't feel like you're alone. There's people out there who will support you and help guide you to your success.
And I think, that's exactly right. And I think the quality of the person that you are is really just reflected in the type of the quality of the friends you keep.
You're absolutely right with that.
And the people you hang around, and the people you associate, and the projects you associate yourself with. But at mm-hmm. the end of the day, it's really just about making memories and relationships with people that you have respect for, that you love, that love you back, respect you back. You don't have to always agree with people. You have to respect them.
Right.
And once that's, if the civility goes, I'm out. That's right. A deal breaker to me.
And unfortunately in America these days, it seems a little bit of that is going away. We're not as many manners as we once did, but we can still keep trying, those of us who are working on that. So you're out there doing the keynote speaking, you're consulting with businesses, you're planning events and hosting events. And the Morton Anderson Foundation, Family Foundation, is also involved in giving back to the Boys and Girls Club, helping the youth of America. Yeah. Let's talk about how you're doing that and why that means so much to you.
I started back in New Orleans when I was in my 20s. I created a program together with some business leaders called Kicks for Kids. We raised almost $1 million for the neonatal intensive care units and the pediatric intensive care units at Children's Hospital down there. Every Tuesday was my day off. I would go to Children's Hospital. I would meet the kids. I would get to know them. And they would be there, some of them, for months, going through cancer treatments and so forth. Some made it, some didn't. Some are very heartbreaking. Other stories and experiences that I had there with these boys and girls, very uplifting. And I just think it started to clarify what was important as I grew older. And it was really simply what our foundation's motto is, that what you give will grow and what you keep will perish. And I just tried to, at that moment, continue to understand that community service is so important. And when I came to Atlanta and I played with other teams, I continued doing work in those local communities. And as we settled here in Atlanta, and after 9/11, that had a big impact with me when I was with the New York Giants. Huge impact, obviously, the attacks on
being
America.
In New York.
That shifted my focus also to the military and to our men and women in uniform. So my foundation, our foundation, is twofold. We help quality. We try to raise money for quality of life programs for children and youth. You mentioned the Boys and Girls Club. Those 4 hours between when they get out of school to their parents come home, or parent come home in many cases, boy, it's a critical time. And the Boys and Girls Club really fill a void there that is really, really important. Quality time. Mm-hmm. They can do their homework. They can do activities that are wholesome, be around people and mentors and guidance.
Yeah.
So that's a very important time. And then I try staying with the youth concept and prevention of obesity, the Play 60 program, helping athletic programs up in Gwinnett County, trying to get kids out and run and play sports at least for 60 minutes a day is really important too. Yeah. So that's that. The other side is helping our military, specifically our special ops guys. And that's when I created special teams for special ops with Tom Branch, Mark Adams, and Bill Stevens, local firefighters, police officers, business leaders here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Boy, it's been very gratifying. Yeah, to do
special
that.
Teams for special ops. You can go check out their website, get involved there with donations or volunteering if you like. And you also have an annual golf tournament that's coming up again this spring. It'll be the fourth annual one. Tell listeners how they can get involved with that if they want to.
It's very simple. We have a website, specialteamsforspecialops.com. You can also go to mortonanderson.com, and we'll have sign-ups there. But it's just been really tremendous, the support we've gotten from our community, from the Atlanta Braves to the Falcons to Northside Hospital to, you know, corporate sponsors down the line. And we're just so grateful for their help, and very powerful when people pull together and understand that we're trying to do something for our American heroes. This is a Operation One Voice, which is one of the beneficiaries besides my foundation. Operation One Voice was created by police and firefighters in Gwinnett County in Duluth. Bill Stevens is CEO, president of that organization. What I love about it is that all funds raised go to the soldiers and their families. There's no administration. There's no paid positions, as you hear with some of these other Wounded Warrior charities, and I'm not going to mention names, but they fail miserably in delivering what they promise. And so I'm very proud to say that Operation One Voice and the Morton Anderson Family Foundation maximize funds raised, and it goes to where it should go. We're thrilled. We've raised over $500,000 in 4 years.
Fantastic.
And we keep going.
Right. And so that dates for that special teams for special ops is May 14th, May 16th, 2016. Go to MortonAnderson.com for more information and stay tuned on that, which is currently under construction.
Yeah.
You can go there now, but it's going to have a new look next week. So visit today, visit next week.
Yeah.
Continue to stay engaged over there on the website and get involved too. If you're wanting your company to perhaps donate or sponsor the event, or if you're know of a serviceman or woman out there who is not getting the help they need, particularly if they're in that special ops community,
yep.
You know, you can reach out and they can, you know, get involved there and become part of that great event out there at Eagle Rock Country Club in Gwinnett County.
Actually, Eagle Rock Distributing is where the dinner auction is, and we're working on getting Benton Blunt there to play. Benton Blunt was one of the finalists on America's Got Talent, and he's going to be there.
Okay.
And we'll have some celebrities and lots of our celebrities are the soldiers, quite honestly, and their families.
Very true.
And that's how we want to keep it. The Monday golf is at the River Club in Suwannee.
Okay.
And that's going to be on Monday. Sunday, we have a private affair at Topgolf for the soldiers and the presenting sponsors. And so that's going to be special. So we're looking for 3 days in May. That's going to be really, really life-changing for a lot of people.
Fantastic. And if we can help you further that mission or amplify that cause there, let us know. We'd be happy to do so. Also, I'd like to mention that you're working on another book as we speak right now.
Yeah.
The writing process, what's that like for you?
That's the white elephant in the room right now. I'm not going to lie about it. It's a difficult process. You sit and you hope the muse comes to you. And if the muse doesn't come, you sit just with a blank stare for a while. Mm-hmm. But I have great ideas about stubbornness and a certain kind of stubborn. I speak about it. And putting it down on paper in book form is just something that is challenging. Mm-hmm. I like to write. Yeah, I just got to find time to write.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Right. We've interviewed many authors in here, and some folks like to, you know, record their voice, then go later transcribe it. Other folks like to take a 2-week vacation and lock themselves in a mountain cabin and don't come out till the book's done.
Yeah.
Others like yourself wait till the muse hits them. And so there's lots of different. Yeah. It's always just fascinating to me how that writing process, because it's in us. Yeah, it's in you.
I keep a note block, you know, wherever I am or by the bedside or wherever. So sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and write things down, and I do have the Dragon Dictation, that
yes,
voice recognition software, and still trying to figure out if that's the best route to go. So there's lots of different ways to get there. You know, the road to success is always under construction. That's just one of those
very well
things.
Said.
And it's full of potholes, and it's full of bumps, and any road will take you there. So guidance is always important, and I do have some good writer friends that have had success in the business that have had, you know, very good advice for me. But at the end of the day, it's your own battle. You have to write the book. So
yeah,
it's a very personal thing.
So look for that, listeners, at some point in the future.
Certain kind of stubborn is the name of the book.
All right. And like I said, go to the website and stay tuned for more information on that book and how you can get that for sure. Do you have anything coming up in 2016? Speaking engagements? Are you going to be on the road? Any events you're really excited about and motivated to go to?
Well, I'll be in San Francisco coming up. I think there's a game coming up in San Francisco here in a couple of weeks.
I think it's called the Super Bowl.
So I'll be heading out to the Super Bowl on Wednesday before the game, and there's many events out there that we're part of. One of the things I'm excited about is being a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
That's right.
So I'm one of 15 guys.
And you'll find out then, that weekend?
Well, it's an interesting process. They lock you in a room on Saturday for a couple of hours, and there's two ways it's going to go. There's going to be a knock on the door, and it's going to be Dave Baker, who's the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he's going to say, "Congratulations, give me a hug. You're in. We got to get your big head measured for a bust.
You got to get your gold jacket.
And we got to get your gold jacket." Or you get a call, and it's Joe Horrigan, who is also with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he's going to say something like, "Yeah, Morton, it's me again. Remember, I've called you the last couple of years. I regret to inform you." And then it goes.
Do they tell you why you didn't make it?
No, they just, you don't get enough votes.
Yeah, that's all
really
it comes
down
to.
It's 46 guys in a room, yeah, and you're waiting for the white smoke.
Right.
It's kind of like when they elect the Pope.
Yeah.
You want white smoke, and you hope it's a good news for you. But
right. So you'll find out that Super Bowl weekend.
Right. So there's some events in some charity events, and there's a huge event on Saturday that I've been part of for 4 or 5 years for hunger relief called Taste of the NFL. It's really wonderful, where Kevin Rathburn, who's a great chef here in Atlanta, he participates. His brother Kent out of Dallas participates. You're going to have all 32 chefs and football legends from all the NFL cities participate. Mm-hmm. It's really, really a fun event. So
wow, that's just right around the corner.
Yeah, I'll be doing that. And then I'll have some events in April and obviously in May, and speaking engagements as we go.
Yeah. And so if you want to book Morton for your company or your organization and have him come out there and speak and motivate your folks, you can get him signed up now. And we last visited with you earlier this last year, 2015, out at the Vistage event here in Atlanta. Expect to see you again at some more Vistage events?
Well, I hope so. The Executive Summit was certainly fun for me. I was picked to do a TED Talk at it, and I really enjoyed doing it. It was challenging to surmise your what you wanted to say in 7 to 10 minutes, but
right.
I felt like it went pretty good, and I was very happy with it. So you'll see me in Vistage moving forward.
Excellent. All right. And so as we wrap up here, I always like to turn the conversation it's been personal all along, but a little more personal. So when you're not out there changing the world of special ops families, youths of America, CEOs, what does Morton like to do in his off time to kind of stay grounded and stay focused?
You know, I'm a family guy. I love spending time with my wife and two boys. I have an 11 and a 16-year-old. So we're in sports, obviously, all the time. I do a lot of coaching in my free time.
Are the kids involved in football?
Yeah, I have my 16-year-old's a middle linebacker at Lanier High School, and my 11-year-old is sort of you know, he's starting middle school after the summer. So we'll see where that goes. They're in basketball right now.
Okay.
And they'll be in soccer in the spring. I'll have a soccer team that I'm coaching that I coached in the fall. And so youth coaching is fun for me. It's really, really very gratifying to take a group of kids that don't know each other. And then 3-4 months later, they're just having a ball.
Right.
Yeah.
So any favorite vacation spot that you like to get away from it all, turn your phone off, emails off, that you can find yourself in?
Well, absolutely. My wife and I just got back from Anguilla in the British West Indies down in the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
We just had a ball. My wife turned 50, so she got a little birthday present. We went down there and no kids and walked on the beach and had a great time.
Fantastic. And the last thing is, anything you're reading these days that you could recommend to some of our listeners out there? What's on your nightstand?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm embarrassed to say I'm not reading a lot right now.
Okay. Got a lot going on.
A lot going on, but I do spend a lot of time. I love National Geographic. I know that's probably corny to say, but I love the pictures. I love travel magazines.
Yes.
I love all of that. And I get most of my news now, like most people do, through the internet.
Yeah, through your mobile device.
Platforms and mobile devices. So there's no question that that's kind of a missing link that I got to sit down and read more.
Okay. Well, certainly look for Morton's new book coming out soon. And you can also stay engaged with Morton on his website at mortonanderson.com, which will be revamped and looking different next time you visit that. So check it out. You can also follow Morton at Twitter at MA2544 if you want to stay updated on the Twitter sphere there. Any other way people can find your
Facebook. You go on Facebook, Morton Anderson. You can find me there as well.
All right.
Special Teams for Special Ops on Facebook. And so we're
good. And all those links will be posted on our website. So listeners, you can connect with us there and connect with Morton through there. So thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. If we can help you again, further your cause or amplify your voice, let us know. We'd be happy to do so.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right. And if your company is out there doing something interesting to genuinely serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the website and pitch us your story. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, and on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan McPherson. We will see you on the radio.